Hey, Angela, do you hear that sizzle?
Ooh, I do. And it smells like chicken fried steak.
That's right. This episode of A Very Okay Podcast, our second episode, is all about chicken fried steak.
Yay, one of my favorite things in the world.
Did you eat it a lot growing up?
Oh, yeah. That was kind of a Sunday thing my mama would make. With some mashed potatoes and some corn or some green beans. And I loved it then, and I still do. Did you eat it growing up?
You know, I had to call my mom because I don't remember. But yeah, she said she made it all the time. So
yeah,
it's like one of those things that's so Oklahoma and with you that you don't really think about it. It's just a meal that you know, I don't consume it every day now, but...
Right, and I wish I could, because I do love going to Del Rancho and getting a big steak sandwich supreme, so... Yeah,
where it's all hanging over...
Oh, yeah, hanging over the bun.
Do you use a greasy little red phone? Do they still have those?
Not at the one by my house, but I wish they did. Kind of miss that.
Well, chicken fried steak is also the main course of the Oklahoma state meal. Did you know we had a state meal?
I did, and it's pretty insane. Why don't you read off the state meal and the caloric intake on that?
Okay, here we go. Well, the state meal isn't just one meal. It's kind of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So okay. Let's break it down here. For breakfast, we're going to have biscuits and gravy with sausage and corn grits with butter. Let's go to lunch. We're going to have barbecue pork sandwich, cornbread, corn, and some squash as some veggie sides.
Mm-hmm.
Then the main event for dinner, the entree is chicken fried steak, side of fried okra, and black-eyed peas and ham.
Sounds delicious.
Then for dessert, we're going to have a slice of pecan pie and some strawberries.
You say pecan. I say pecan.
I don't know if I do. I think I just might have been quoting When Harry Met Sally. I don't know whether pecan. Is it the same thing?
Well, it's the same nut, yeah.
I mean, is one correct and one the other's not?
I think that's probably a regional dialect thing.
Okay. Like wash and warsh?
That's just, warsh is just wrong.
I know. I mean, my dad even says Washington, D.C. It drives me nuts. Okay, so let's look at how many calories that is. It's kind of insane. So the entire state meal, from a caloric intake, it's about 3,500 calories a day.
Okay, so that's if you eat all three of those meals, and that's with the dessert. Okay.
And if I were to eat that, I would gain about 15 pounds in 5 weeks.
If I had that every day. Yeah. Let's try it.
No. You're trying to kill me. So should we talk about what exactly chicken fried steak is in the first place before we get into anything else?
Yeah, I guess I kind of forget that some people may not know what chicken fried steak is.
For all of our overseas listeners, I think I checked the stats and we had like 14 random people in Germany.
Hi, Germany.
Guten Tag?
Guten Tag.
Is that correct?
I don't know. I hope it is.
We'll check later. Hopefully we didn't offend the entire nation of Germany. So chicken fried steak essentially is beef steak, normally not the best quality, it depends.
It can be kind of cheaper or not as tender.
Yeah, not as tender. And then you either mechanically tenderize it or you beat it with one of those little mallets, aluminum mallets like you probably remember your mom having, the little teeth on it. Or you can use anything, just kind of pound it out, tenderize the meat, put it in an egg wash, basically just dip it in egg and then put it in any type of seasoned flour and then pan fry it. And that's a chicken fried steak. Essentially, you're chicken frying it like you would fry chicken.
Yeah, so it's just like its name, chicken fried steak.
The confusing thing, I think, is there's also...
chicken fried chicken?
There's fried chicken, and then there's chicken fried chicken, which I'm not even sure what chicken fried chicken is.
Is that different than fried chicken? Just a different way to say it?
I think it's tenderized, too. So I think it's like a breast that you...
Tenderize?
I know.
That sounds gross.
I've never had it.
I don't know if I have.
It doesn't matter.
No. Did you know that according to the Kitchen Project site, that the first evidence of meat dredged, breaded, and fried comes from the first century?
I did not. Whereabouts?
All over Europe. Evidently, the Romans were bringing it in.
So this idea of a chicken fried steak type meal is nothing new.
No, it sounds like it's pretty ancient, and it's all over the globe. Even if you just like Wikipedia chicken fried steak, it'll take you all over these places. And different countries have, of course, different names, and some of the meats are different, but it's the same technique, the pounding of the meat and the breading and the frying.
Huh. Well, I was wondering about this, and I was thinking about who could we talk to that could kind of take us through where we get what we consider chicken fried steak. And I thought, well, you know, where are we going to get a chicken fried steak expert? And then I remembered in the Encyclopedia of Oklahoma History and Culture, there's an article on chicken fried steak written by Dr. Bobby Weaver.
Who better?
Exactly. So, yeah, let's get Dr. Bobby Weaver in here. Thanks, Dr. Bobby Weaver. You wrote the article for the Encyclopedia of Oklahoma History and Culture on chicken fried steak.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk a little bit about how you did your research and where you started? And first, let's start off with what makes an ideal chicken fried steak?
To me, there are two aspects to chicken fried steak. Number one is getting it fried nice and crispy. And number two is the gravy. They go together, you know. And so those are the two aspects I think are most important. I have certain personal preferences, and I think that applies to a lot of people. I don't like my gravy on my steak. I like my gravy separate. A lot of people, you know, they think you should put the gravy on there. Mm-hmm. To me, that kind of makes the crust a little soggy and everything. So I had rather have a gravy separate, you know, and then you
like
cut your steak
sauce.
And then you make kind of a dipping sauce.
Yeah,
there you go. Make kind of a dipping sauce out of it. Actually, I know a number of people who don't like to use gravy at all. They just as soon have ketchup on their chicken fried steak. So, I mean,
Angela's one of those, yeah.
I don't like anything on it. If it's a good enough chicken fried steak, then you don't need...
It's nice and crunchy and well-cooked and tender.
Tender
and
on the inside, then I do not need any kind of fixings
on it. Okay.
Yep.
So you are an absolute purist.
I am absolute purist.
See, I think that's absolutely crazy because I've got to have gravy smothered
well, I mean, you know, it's like chili. You know, I'm from Texas. I mean, it's blasphemy to put beans in your chili, you know. and so there are people who won't eat chili without it. So it's the same principle here with chicken fried steak.
Yep.
So in your research, what did you discover about the historical origins of chicken fried steak?
Historical origins. Well, now, this gets complicated. Oh, okay, for one thing, chicken fried steak, as we know it today, is essentially a folk-type food. It is poor folks' food, okay? And going through the South, you find pork prepared very much like chicken fried steak because it is a cheap meat that you can get and so forth. Chicken fried steak, as such, was relegated to kind of the western half of Louisiana, all of Texas, a good part of Oklahoma. And that was pretty much the geographic area where it originated. It originated with working-class people who could find an inexpensive cut of beef, tenderize this in some way, and then prepare it in such a way that would make a good meal of it. In an earlier time, I personally do not remember a time it was not called chicken fried steak. In an earlier time, it was either called pan steak or country fried steak, it was called that. All of the research I found indicated it was long in the 1930s before the term chicken fried was adopted. Nobody really knows. It became very, very much the term to use. Now, it spread quite widely long in the 30s. That was the time of the hard times, the migration to California, and that area from here to California, particularly in California, chicken fried steak became a big deal. It still is, I understand, in areas out there. So it left...
It's kind of migrated with the people.
Yeah, and the people took their food with them, you see. And foodways are one of those things that survive much longer, a lot of times longer than language, you know, with people. Foodways, people identify with their foodways, you know. Now, I was thinking back, I did quite a bit of research. Well, once I got involved in this kind of accidentally because, as I say, I've eaten chicken fried steak all of my life, and it got to be kind of a fun thing, and a number of years ago, I started collecting cookbooks, and I collect anything from anything before 1950 or as far back, and then I don't do the modern ones, looking for the way people prepared food in a different time. And mine is more of a hobby than a serious research thing. But I discovered that the very first truly American cookbook was a book by a lady the name of Mary Randolph. It was called The Virginia Housewife. And it was first published in 1824 in Virginia. And in it, she has this, and she has a veal cutlet that's prepared exactly like chicken fried steak. It's a thin cut piece of meat that's tenderized, beaten with whatever, you know, and tenderized, and then battered, and then fried, and so forth. So the use of the that type of food harkens back to a very early time. Now, the first mention I could find of something that would approximate chicken fried steak I found in this part of the world was at a cookbook mid-1880s, about 1885 or so, right in that time frame, at Burney, Texas. Now, Burney is a town about 30, 40 miles northwest of San Antonio, to put it in. And it's the middle of German country, okay? And anyway, the recipe in that particular book was exactly what chicken fried steak is today, which brings up a point. How did this exact recipe come about? And the truth of the matter is the German schnitzel and chicken fried steak, you can't tell the difference except the gravy. Mm-hmm. The Germans use more of a brown gravy.
So that's the...
And there are a variety of schnitzels. Yeah. I mean, you know, you get it different. Yeah. But they're pretty much the same. So that German country in central Texas, San Antonio region down in South Texas and whatever, schnitzel there kind of morphed into what we know as chicken fried, what became the country fried steak or chicken fried steak.
Can you give us a breakdown of the Dr. Bobby Weaver chicken fried steak process?
Take a piece of round steak, about half inch or less, mm-hmm. in thickness, and then you beat the dobbin out of it, you tenderize it. You can, nowadays, they at meat markets, they have these tenderizing machines you can run them through. When I was growing up, my mama, I've seen her use a saucer. And bang on a piece of meat, you know, to a tenderizer. Later on, we got fancy. She got one of those little tenderizer, a little about a 2-inch square aluminum head on a hammer, mm-hmm. with little spines on
right,
it,
right.
Well, whatever. And that, so she tenderized her steak there. And then if you're going to prepare it, you know, there's always, you know, there's a single dredge and double dredge people. Mm-hmm. That gets the big argument. First of all, you take a milk and egg batter. Mix it up, a little salt and pepper, or whatever you want to add, whatever you want to put in there. I even knew a person that chopped up jalapeno chilies real fine and put in that
good.
Batter. So I mean, you know, depends on your taste. But anyway, yeah. Salt and pepper, basically, you can't beat that. And then you dip it in that batter and then dredge it through the flour. Well, actually, put salt and pepper and thing in the flour and mix it up as well. But you dredge it through that. And then there are those who are the double dredge. Then you re-dip it and then
redredge
it, so you get a thicker batter. But the trick is to make it crispy and everything. Now, I personally, in our family, if there's any chicken fried steak, I'm one that cooks it. So I learned from my mama. But at any rate, I discovered it. I'm not that great a cook. There's a few things I can do. I can do cornbread and I can do chicken fried steak. But what I like to do is take your chicken fried steak and cut it in strips. And that way, you got a smaller piece of meat and you can get it real crispy and done. You know, and when you turn it over, it's real, the crust is done real well. Whereas if you use a big piece like you get in a restaurant, I've been in places more, I mean, they lap over the edge.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, and it's difficult to get that crust properly done on a larger
piece. Yeah, and evenly cooked throughout.
Evenly cooked,
yeah,
exactly.
If it's as big as your head, it's hard to get it.
Exactly. So, you know, so if you want more, you know, you can take two strips.
Right.
You don't have to want.
So do you have any, not to give away all your secrets, but is there a little something that you don't tell anybody?
No, not really. Quite frankly, it's just very simple. You got to be patient, which I'm not noted for my patience. But you've got, you know, you got to practice like anything. You know, You're not going to be real good at something first day on the job, mm-hmm. you know. And so, and it's cooking is that way. And all the good cooks I've ever seen, I've never known one to follow a recipe. Really good cooks, they'll take a recipe and then think, well, you need just a little tad more of this or a little bit. But chicken fried steak is that way. Now now that's the steak part. Mm-hmm. Now let's go to the gravy part. Now, my personal preference, I don't particularly care for the gravy that you get at restaurants. And the reason I don't is this why. I like, you know, at home, you're making smaller portions. So when you finish frying your steak and you pour off most of the grease, here I am talking, you know, this is not very dietetic.
No. But anyway, I mean, it is chicken fried steak, so we're not helping.
You're left with all those little crumblies, I call them, off the batter and everything. And then you put in three or four tablespoons of flour, you know, and then start mixing in your milk. Well, then when you make your gravy that way, it isn't white. It's more of a brownish thing, and it has all that flavor that comes out of those crumblies in there. And to me, that's the best gravy in the world. You know, that's what's designed to go with chicken fried steak.
Yeah, it's straight from the pan you cooked it in.
Yeah, so. There you go. And you only got one pan cleaned up.
Okay, let's talk sides. What two sides do you serve with your chicken fried steak?
Mashed potatoes, number one. Always mashed potatoes. That's good enough for me. Maybe whole kernel corn. Mm-hmm. Okay, I like whole kernel corn with.
I grew up with green beans, so.
Green beans are good. You know, you can't beat a big pot of green beans with a bunch of bacon put in there. I mean,
that's a meal in itself.
Oh yeah, that is. But yeah, cornbread, and you know, and once again, but you know, you can get fat eating chicken fried steak.
Oh yeah.
No,
oh,
I mean
yeah.
even the, I mean oh, yeah. if you step back and think about it for a second, it's. Chicken fried steak. It's not a health food.
Yeah, it's not. And all the things that you eat with it, too, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is not with the modern dietetic salads and I understand chefs and people in the food business trying to develop new products, you know, mm-hmm. and attract customers and everything. But don't screw with my chicken fried steak.
I think that's as good as places.
Yeah. For us.
There we go. Thank you, Dr. Bobby Weaver.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed it end, guys.
Okay, that was a great interview. Yeah, as you can see from what Dr. Bobby Weaver was saying, there's a direct German influence to what we consider chicken fried steak.
So how did that German influence end up here in Oklahoma?
Well, it's kind of everywhere. Between 1820 and 1920, there were over 7 million Germans that immigrated to the United States.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and even in Indian Territory, in 1890, there were 739 German-born residents in Oklahoma Territory.
Right. So how did they make their way into Oklahoma?
Well, most of the Germans didn't just settle. They didn't come straight for Indian Territory or Oklahoma. They migrated through the United States. And as, you know, the land runs and land lotteries were going up, that attracted a lot of German communities and families to settle new lands.
Right. Well, did you know that, like, in between 1890 to 1920, there were 16 different German language newspapers in Oklahoma?
Wow. What towns, you know, do you remember?
Yeah. Most of it was Western Oklahoma. So it'd be like Blaine County, Canadian County, Kingfisher. But there also was a paper down in McAllister as well.
For the most part, these German communities were flourishing here in Oklahoma. And that, you know, up until the 1920s, until the outbreak of World War One, and we'll kind of tease this.
For a later podcast.
Yeah. The Red Scare was really hard on Germans here in Oklahoma.
Right.
Okay, well, enough with the history lesson. Let's go get some chicken fried steak.
I'm with you.
Okay, we're here with Russ Johnson, owner of Ludivine.
Oh, and R&J Lounge and Supper Club.
Yes, thanks, Russ. Talk about your experience with chicken fried steak.
I think probably the first time I ever had chicken fried steak, if I had to guess. I don't remember for sure, but it was probably like at Furs, you know, something like that over on the one in the French Market Mall. We used to go there pretty often. I actually still really miss that place. But my first job ever, I've cooked pretty much my whole life, ever since I was a little kid. My first job was at a place called Charlie Newton's, and they were very well known for their chicken fried steak. That was kind of their signature thing. And so, so my first job ever was working there in that kitchen making their chicken fried steak. So, I've kind of had a relationship with it going back to the beginning of my career. They did a few different ones. They made some out of New York. I think they got all of their stuff from Clubhouse Meats, if I remember correctly. And their just sort of normal chicken fried steak on the menu was a New York strip that was trimmed, and I think they were like cut in half and then mechanically tenderized. And that was kind of the normal one. And then they had the Charlie's chicken fry, which was made out of a filet. I think they had 9 and 11 ounce filets at the time, and made it out of the 9 ounce. And then when Charlie and his buddies would come in, he'd always have us make it out of the 11 ounce ones. And so, I mean, they were pound out an 11 ounce filet, and you know, it's about that big. That, and you hit it with a mallet, and it just, you know, tenderloin's so soft. You know, usually you kind of use tougher, a little more gristly cuts of steak, inexpensive stuff that, you know, needs to be tenderized, and that's, you know, kind of why you use those. But making all those filets, I mean, they just pound out into nothing. And so that was kind of fun.
So Russ, what would you say are the key elements to a really good chicken fried steak?
Texture, I think, is really key. Again, it's got to be that kind of perfect, you know, not too tender, not too tough. You definitely want it to have a chewiness to it, but you also don't want tough, big pieces of sinew and connective tissue all running through it either. It's kind of a happy medium. When you use the mechanically tenderized stuff, I found that sometimes people will over tenderize it to where it's really tender, but it loses that steaky quality, and it starts to border more on like kind of a chop steak, you know, almost a ground type texture, which to me, if I'm eating chicken fried steak, I really want it to have that kind of chewy steakiness. So texture is big, and again, also texture as far as the breading, like I mentioned, I like it to be really crisp, really crunchy on the outside. Not too heavy though. I mean, I hate when, you know, you have this big thick layer of breading and, you know, all the different stages, you know, you have the batter in there and all that, and then just like this really thin kind of bland piece of meat. So texture is big, and then just of course flavor. And so I tend to season all the components pretty well. You know, we're going to do a 3-stage breading. We'll do a flour dredge and an egg wash and then a potato crust, and I'll season each of those pretty well so that the whole thing has a good amount of flavor, as well as the meat itself. You know, I'd like to throw something in there about the quality of the meat, but I have to admit, with the chicken fried steak, it's just really not that crucial. You know, it's being so heavily manipulated, not only physically, mechanically, but then also all the stuff that, you know, the seasoning, all the breading, the battering, frying, and all that. I mean, no one is going to be able to tell the difference at the end of the day, whether it's as far as a grade or even anything, you know, whether it's grass-fed beef or feedlot beef or whatever. You'll just never be able to tell, really. So, like so many other things, you know, it's a way to take something that would normally be pretty undesirable and not particularly, you know, appetizing or appealing, and make it, you know, make something great out of it.
Okay, so let's talk sides. What sides do you like to eat with your chicken fried steak?
I feel like mashed potatoes for sure, and, you know, green beans, something like that, something nice and simple. It's pretty tough to beat fresh green beans. I mean, it's pretty tough to beat. That's how we serve it at R&J. And in a pinch, I mean, you know, even canned green beans. Every time I go to Junior's, I always get their green beans, which are like the kind of Italian style, like the flat broad ones, you know, that are about that long. They're canned and cooked down, and they're good.
Can you give us an idea of your chicken fried steak cooking process and what you'll be doing today?
Yeah, so today I'm going to do a little bit different version from the one we serve at R&J, in that we're using a bone-in ribeye. Again, you know, usually I would use sirloin or even round, you know, cube steak, something like that. But I do like doing these. I like kind of having the bone in there for the presentation. It's also a nice kind of family style version. Here at Ludovine, we do a lot of dinner for two, things like that. And so it's kind of fun to get a big bone-in ribeye and pound it out and make a chicken fried steak out of it. So I'm doing that, and then I'm, as far as the actual process and the breading, I'm doing basically what we do at the R&J, which is sort of unique in that I bread the outside with potatoes. I take basically these kind of potato cakes. It kind of looks like a, you know, like a McDonald's hash brown, basically. And so it just gives you this really crispy, savory, kind of just awesome crust on it that sometimes you don't get otherwise. I feel like with the flour crusts, you know, sometimes they're just not quite crispy enough, especially when they sit there for a little while. And then, you know, you can use breadcrumbs, but then that's getting into sort of more of like a Milanese or like schnitzel type thing that doesn't really come off like chicken fried steak and you have breadcrumbs. So this is kind of a nice in-between. It kind of gives you that super crunchy, crispy texture, but it still feels kind of down-home and American. So we'll go ahead and get the kind of the dredge and my egg wash and stuff ready, and then we'll start pounding this guy out and go from there. Also, these ribeyes, depending on where along the rib they come from, sometimes they're a little tricky because you have this cap here that is already kind of separate, and once you pound it out, it really wants to kind of hang off, so sometimes I'll even trim that off. But I usually pound it first and then just see what it's looking like. And go both sides. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break from this and then make some gravy. So gravy is cream gravy. You can do different styles of gravy. The one we did at Charlie Newton's was sort of an in-between between a classic white cream gravy and a brown gravy. It was, and that's kind of what I'll be doing here. We'll be basically making a bechamel, only instead of, which is a roux thickened white sauce, usually milk-based. And instead of butter, which is traditional, I'll be using some bacon drippings. For the base of the roux, and then we'll add a little bit of a brown stock. I have some sweet bread braising liquid that we'll use to kind of finish it off. That'll just give a little more flavor, and we'll give it a little bit of some color as well. So, and again, you want a good consistent coating, but you also don't want it to get too thick and heavy. So with each stage, we kind of knock off all the excess that we can. Just egg and some seasoning. People will sometimes put, you know, milk or water or something in egg wash, but I don't. The whole idea of frying is to get things crispy, and the way you get things crispy is by removing moisture. So any liquid that you add to any part of frying, you're just going to have to remove that, which means you're going to have to fry it longer, which means you run higher risk of overcooking. And so I try to keep things as dry and sort of, you know, add as little liquid to things as possible if they're going to be dry. You know, look for it to get golden, and then some things will kind of start to float a little bit towards the surface once they're done. Those are pretty thick, so chicken fried steak's pretty thin, so they'll cook pretty quick. All right, the ultimate chicken fried steak.
Okay, we're gonna cut back to the studio because from then on out, all you hear is just obscene sounds of us enjoying one of the best chicken fried steaks we've ever had.
Oh, yes, it was so good.
I can't thank Russ Johnson enough to cook us up some chicken fried steak and hang out with us for an hour. That was super nice. And Russ is a pretty big deal here in the city. He's owner and chef at Ludovine. And we asked Russ to kind of give us a breakdown of the idea behind Ludovine.
So to me, what it's about is just real. It's just kind of, you know, real food and real cooking, you know, proper technique and just getting the best ingredients we can get our hands on, the freshest stuff, knowing where the stuff came from and being familiar with it and just always, just constantly creating, you know, being in the kitchen all the time and just, you know, the menu changes for basically every day. So, and to kind of keep it fresh and it's just you're kind of always coming up with new stuff. So to me, that's what it's all about. And when I moved, I was in Colorado for 9 years and worked at a little French place out there that did exactly the same thing. They didn't even have a printed menu. It was just a chalkboard menu, and we would write it every day and went to the farmer's market every week and all that. And so I really wanted to do something like that when I moved back. And I felt like there really wasn't anything here that was just truly food focused, you know. As far as a restaurant, and certainly nobody doing sort of that method and that approach, and so that was just sort of the goal, is to sort of start open something like that and sort of bring it to Oklahoma.
Russ has another restaurant. Why don't you tell us a bit about it?
R&J Lounge and Supper Club, and it's fabulous. I've been there many times, and it's got this kind of throwback, swanky 70s, 80s vibe to it. Kind of reminds me of when I was a really little kid and during like the oil boom in Oklahoma. But it's accessible. Like anybody, you can go in there like in jeans or whatever. But I do imagine like my little self staring at men with gold nugget necklaces or women in their fur coats. But yeah, no, they have great food and they have retro cocktails and they have a great patio too.
Ludovine too has got a great bar.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, hey, Chris Barrett, I went to high school with you and you're an excellent bartender at Ludovine.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, Chris. Well, that about sticks a fork in episode number two.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, you like that?
It was kind of cute. I have to admit that this episode definitely makes me want to do more food episodes.
yeah, we'll get to it. What other Oklahoma foods do you think?
Well, I love barbecue.
Barbecue, and that's going to be controversial.
Yeah, it kind of is. Or we could always go try some pecan pie.
So we try to steer away from crazy controversy like barbecue, but if you go on our Twitter account right now, at A Very Okay Podcast, we've got a poll for the best chicken fried steak in the state, like what place has it. So
yeah, definitely give us your suggestions because I will want to try some of them.
Yeah, we're probably going to have like four or five up there and somebody's going to be mad that their favorite spot's not up there. So yeah, go take the poll and I got to tell you, the response to the podcast has been overwhelming.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys and girls.
Yeah, if we get in a couple months, we might have a listener meetup or something here in the city. Mm-hmm. So,
ooh, give them a teaser.
Yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks with, man, I'm excited about this next one. We've got a celebrity special guest.
We do. Coming into the studio.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, don't give it away.
Okay, well, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.